your stories from racing's heartland. This is RSN 927's Racing Pulse.
Welcome back to Racing Pulse. It's 20 to 9. Tom Riley is the CEO of the Thoroughbred Breeders Association. There's lots going on with the TBA at the moment, including their take on the ongoing war in the Hunter Valley between the breeders and the mines, and lots of other stuff as well, as Tom joins me. G'day, Tom.
Morning, Matt. Thank you for having me on.
Absolute pleasure, mate. Yeah, we had an interesting chat to Tom Magnier from Coolmore a week or so ago on Racing Pulse, and he was describing the never-ending, seemingly, battle between the breeders and the miners in the Hunter Valley. I'll play a little excerpt shortly, but just a take from TBA on that ongoing tug of war in the Hunter Valley?
Yeah, I think it's something that Tom would have touched on. That it's been going on for so long, particularly with that mine and that site, which sort of abuts Coolmore and Godolphin up there. But the real issues you've got, a centre of excellence, whichever way you look at it, the Hunter Valley is the powerhouse of the breeding industry. It's one of the leading thoroughbred breeding centres in the whole world. And obviously mining is very important to the Hunter Valley as well. And unfortunately, the New South Wales government haven't been able to put in place the protections to let the two industries coexist. And just the nature of the fact that it's going on and on and on and seemingly never ending, I think, really sort of affects confidence up there and probably affects investment in the area as well.
I'll play a grab from Tom Magnier and then we'll keep chatting about it. This was Tom Magnier on The Verdict last Monday.
There's plenty of farms up here, you know. The Hunter River here, you know, it affects all the farms. Yarraman Park, Sedgenhoe, all the stud farms up here are under threat from mining. You know, we've put millions into the infrastructure of the place. As I said, it's an unbelievable farm. But at the same time, like, I'm not going to lie to you, like, there's been people in Victoria have been saying to us, listen, if you come to Victoria, you know, we will help you. And, you know, it's something at the moment I have my head down and I'm trying to fight this as Godolphin are, as all the stud farms up here are. If they don't do something about this up here, you know, it could come to a stage where the cluster of the thoroughbredness could look at moving to Victoria.
You can hear his passion and almost his exhaustion from all these battles with the mines. And we did put it to him whether there was an option that these studs may have to uproot from their famous home in the Hunter Valley and come down to Victoria where they would feel possibly more welcome. Where do you think it's at? I mean, he said, well, we're going to go into battle again, but we've been in battle four times. If it's a blinking competition, who's going to lose?
Yeah, that's a really difficult one. I think the last time Coolmore and Godolphin had this fight was sort of 4 years ago, and the Planning Assessment Commission came down strongly in their favour and said the development of the Drayton South mine just couldn't coexist with their business. And they actually thought then the government came in and it looked like they were going to give some certainty. I think that's what everyone wants. I mean, I think as Tom alluded to there, or Tom said there, that, you know, a huge amount of investment has gone into those properties. People don't want to, you know, don't want to go elsewhere because they're committed. They've been there a long time and they want to stay there. So look, I think, you know, obviously the Planning Assessment Commission, where it is with this mine at the moment, is that the government has essentially ticked off the mine and given it the green light. But that decision then has to be ratified by an independent planning commission, which is where we're up to now. And in fact, it's the last day for submissions on that. They close at 5 p.m. this afternoon. So still time for people to have their say if they want to. And then they'll be giving a decision either sort of right at the end of the year or early next year. But certainly I think if that decision goes the wrong way, people will question, why there would be ongoing investment in an area where the government doesn't seem to be able to provide enough protection to ensure that, you know, what is a sustainable industry, what is an industry that's been there for well over 100 years, can remain there and remain viable.
It would be an extraordinary situation, like the biggest racing and breeding story in Australian history almost, if the epicentre of breeding was shut down and they all had to bail and rehome in Victoria, which has always been the second cousin, really, in the breeding industry, hasn't it?
Yeah. Look, I should say, I think we're probably a long way from that yet, and really I hope the government, firstly, I hope the PAC make the right decision here, and then the government understand really what's at threat by not putting in place the protections to allow the two industries to coexist. Because look, no one in the Hunter Valley, no breeder in the Hunter Valley is saying, you know, we should shut down mining or there shouldn't be further mining development in the area. It's just a case of, you know, demarking an area so that the breeders know that they've got surety that they're not going to be developed right on top of.
Yeah, and it seems like the major threat of what Tom Magney was saying was that the Hunter River, which flows through, is used by so many of these studs, and that the damage to that river was the main area of concern. So, as you say, we'll see what happens when it all goes to the PAC for review, but you wonder how many times that this can be continually appealed by both parties. So we'll see what happens there. Tom, it's been a shocking year all round for everybody in every facet of life, and that includes the racing and breeding and yearling sale industries. Of course, the yearling sales all went online, and the movement of broodmares and so on was made extremely difficult and almost impossible in some cases through the COVID restrictions. What do we think when we reflect back on the last 6 months in the racing and breeding world?
Yeah, look, I think it's been one of huge challenges. I'm sure all your listeners have had themselves. You know, for breeders, you know, we had to convince governments that we were an essential activity, an essential business. You know, the breeding industry is very much a national industry, and there's a huge amount of movement between states. And so, you know, TBA, part of our job was to make sure that governments would allow that movement and allow breeders to move their mares between states. So there was some sort of frantic hair pulling and dealing with, you know, I think with the Queensland government, we were dealing with five different separate government departments that all had to sign off on a plan to be able to allow mares to move both into New South Wales and from New South Wales into Queensland. So, look, it's been a challenging time, but I think the racing industry, the breeding industry, you know, you mentioned that, you know, we had to be very flexible. You know, the sales went online. You know, the sales were, given all the surround, you know, all the challenges we had, have held up pretty well. And, you know, when you reflect on where the racing industry is, you know, part of my job is to sort of sell the Australian industry to potential investors overseas. And, you know, if you look at how we have held up in the year of COVID, we're actually doing far better than basically any other jurisdiction. So, you know, if you look at this year in Australia, there have been 52 races run that have been worth $1 million or more. Mm. Europe, there's 7. And in America, it's in the 20s. So, you know, obviously wagering's held up. We've been able to keep the show on the road. And I think, you know, a lot of people around the world have looked at Australia as doing a very good job through breeding and racing and through the sales in the past 6 months.
The online yearling sales, as you say, I think there was a bit of a dip, but it didn't fall in a hole as many thought it may, with people unable to physically inspect the horses that were going for enormous amounts of money. Just out of curiosity, the international yearling sales throughout the same period, how were they affected? Do you know what they were able to do? I imagine they went online as well, but did they carry on as nearly as seamlessly as ours did through that period?
Yeah, I think you know, the sort of yearling sale season has just finished in the Northern Hemisphere. Europe, the top end was still strong. There was a dip at the lower end, and likewise in America. We probably held up a little bit better. I mean, we were lucky that when the COVID restrictions hit, we'd had a lot of our bigger sales, you know, by the time that hit. And obviously Easter was, and then the Magic Millions National Sale were conducted online. So look, internationally, we've probably held up probably just a little bit better than everyone else. People have been sort of pleasantly surprised that the buyers have taken to new technology and, you know, are moving to a way where don't have to be inspecting horses on the ground.
I don't recall whether the Ready to Run in New Zealand last week was virtual or attended, but it was enormously successful, so that might be a pointer to the future. Of the future, with the yearling sales season's literally upon us, what's it going to look like this year?
Yeah, look, I had a meeting last week. I was down in Canberra last week and met the Deputy Prime Minister and also met Minister Dutton's office. They were very helpful and getting some buyers in, getting exemptions for buyers to travel into Australia for the broodmare sales back in June, July. We're hopeful that there'll be some international buyers who actually want to come out and do the quarantine and stay through the sale season. But it's going to look different this year at the start of next year because, you know, usually at Magic Millions there'd be 200 plus buyers coming from overseas to take part in that sale, and you know that's just not going to happen this year. If there's some internationals, it'll be probably a dozen or so. So that will be different, but. As I mentioned early on, a lot of the key things, key indicators in terms of the racing here, the prize money is still good. I hope a lot of those foreign investors will be who've taken part in the yearling sales before will look at how we've held up in the last 9 months and want to continue to invest.
I'm talking to Tom Riley from Thoroughbred Breeders Australia. If you want to get involved throughout the morning, 0416 90 50 52. Andrew Nicol from the Australian Trainers Association is going to join me in a sec, Tom, to talk about Yedida Clark and the worrying situation that she finds herself in and whether we have any updates. And I do have a little update with her as well. But he's going to be no doubt interested to tune in and listen to where you guys are at with the welfare panel that was established by TBA and also involves other group, including the Trainers Association, jockeys and the VR. Dennis Napthine and others involved. Dennis Napthine is the chair. What's the latest with the welfare panel?
Yeah, well, I've actually just come from a meeting with them yesterday. So the panel's Dennis Napthine. We've got Ken Jacobs, who's a former president of the Australian Veterinary Association, Bitter Jones, who's the head of policy at RSPCA, and Jack Lake, who's a former prime ministerial advisor on agriculture policy. So we've got a really good panel. And we put a call out for submissions earlier this year, and really they were overwhelmed. I was taken quite by surprise by just the level of interest and people wanting to have their say. So the panel's been set up to look at the welfare of the horses, particularly welfare of horses exiting the industry, and those that never entered the racing industry, those thoroughbreds of the bred that never entered the racing industry. Obviously, there was a 730 report last year, so as a response to that and a response to try and look at this as a national issue and look at what can be done, what all sectors of the industry can do. So they've had over 180 submissions, so literally thousands of pages of submissions they've received. They've met with well over 50 groups or individuals after receiving those submissions. So they've actually been locked away for 3 days this week discussing their recommendations, trying to sift through all of that. Lots of great suggestions were made to them and really pull together their recommendations on how we can improve.
And the timeline, because I ask that because Racing Australia is seemingly running a separate welfare movement as well, and Miles Foreman joined Michael Felgate last week to talk about traceability and holistic life-to-death following of horses for welfare reasons. But just remind our listeners that the TBA-related one is a separate welfare panel and pursuit?
Yeah, so I should say it's not just the TBA. It's supported by a huge number of groups, including, as you mentioned, the ATA, AJA, a lot of the leading clubs. Really, we felt there needed to be a national conversation about welfare, and that needed to be really broad in nature to look at not just what we as an industry do, but also look at the regulation. And I'm sure some of the recommendations that the panel come up with will be for state government, may even be for federal government. So we felt there was a need for that to have that discussion, also to have some independent thinking. Also, to have some people from outside the industry who've got relevant experience to kind of to put their to use their experience really. So that's why it was set up. As I say, we've received a huge amount of support, both contributions to the costing and funding of the process, but also in terms of that engagement. So yes, it's an independent process. They will be handing their recommendations now. Look, they were aiming to do it by the end of the year, but we'll see how these last 3 days have gone. I think the most important thing is that they feel they've had enough time to deliberate, enough time to give the right consideration to all of those submissions. So I'll be guided by them. I don't want to put an arbitrary date there and sort of rush them for their recommendations. I think this is going to be an important piece of work, and I want them to have enough time to be able to do the job properly.
And implementation would be something that we'd be working towards in 2021?
I hope so, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, beautiful. Good on you, Tom. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks very much for having me on.